海紧缺人才培训工程系列丛书，英语高级口语资格证书考试，高级听力教程第二版，周国强、杨永平主编，由上海外语音像出版社录制出版。第六合
An Advanced Course of English Listening Second Edition。
Part 4, The Supernatural. Hi, Paul. What are you reading?
Oh, some draft article about a haunted house.
What do you mean, Daft?
Well, it's, I don't know. They've seen some ghosts there or something. I don't know.
Well, where is it?
It's just down the road, in Offley End.
Well, it's old enough. What's wrong with that? There probably are some ghosts.
Well...I don't believe in ghosts, frankly. Do you?
Well, yeah. I don't think we've got any proof that they don't exist. I mean, the number of people who've seen them, had experiences with them, I think it's a bit narrow-minded of you to say that there's no such thing.
Oh, well, I mean, I've had no evidence. I've never seen a ghost myself, and until I do, I shan't believe in it.
Well, Bruce, what about you?
I keep an open mind on it, really. If people firmly believe there's such things as ghosts, that's, up to them. But I would never, sort of, scoff the idea. I would never turn around and say, oh, no, it's a load of rubbish. Until you get absolute proof one way or the other, you know.
But you haven't seen one yourself.
I've never seen a ghost, but, it doesn't mean to say, 'cause I haven't seen one, that there isn't such things.There's lots of things I haven't seen, but they are about.
There's a friend of mine who's sort of spent all her life living with ghosts. I mean, I believe what she says, and she's got stories which don't just involve her, but, I mean, other people who've been involved with her ghosts as well.
I think people invent them. I think people want to believe in ghosts because their lives are so tedious, so boring, etc., that they invent stories. I think it's a thing from the past when, you know, in the old days, people believed them because they don't have any scientific explanation for them.
Yeah, but how...
It's like I said before, it's always difficult unless you can. I'm sure there are times when you can, give a reason for what people think is supernatural. It may not be at all, which I agree with you on that.But I am convinced as well that there are times when the scientists can't give an adequate explanation why this happens, and that's the time when, you know, when I think, well, if you've got to believe them in that respect, so...
Yes, well, I think scientists will. I mean, you take thunder and lightning. In the old days, they thought that was the anger of the gods, right?Or it takes something like a magnet lifting up metal. I mean, it's amazing. It seemed like supernatural, but now there's a scientific explanation for it.
But there are stories where you get people who, like yourself, who disbelieve them, and maybe even the scientists say, no, that's a load of rubbish. And then something happens on some occasion somewhere with them where they completely change round the opposite.And they turn out to be believers.
And there's also the idea that people who so strongly disbelieve in ghosts, I mean, it does seem a little bit narrow-minded, but it also seems like basically they're frightened to admit there's something beyond their control. You know, I mean, it could just be that you're just too frightened to admit that there's something there and you're not receptive enough, you know?
Well, that's your opinion. I shall continue to refuse to believe it until I have my own personal experience.Thank you.
Part 5. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. 6 people were injured in the store fire and firefighters rescued at least 5 people trapped on the roof of the burning building, fire officials said.
2. I'm optimistic and hopeful that at the next round of talks, we will be able to announce a permanent ceasefire in the Middle East.
3. Their defense lawyer told the press that his clients had complained to him they had been tortured, assaulted, and intimidated. They required urgent medical examination.
4. The reform we propose would result in tighter control over the sale of alcohol. We would not see it sold alongside grocery items, but rather displayed in a separate, clearly defined area.
5. With the help of a page torn from a primary school atlas, a former Vietnamese naval officer navigated a small boat to Australia as an illegal immigrant.
2. Passage translation.
1. During the past 5 years, the number of Americans killed annually in car accidents has climbed to more than 55,000. The needless slaughter on streets and highways can be attributed to 3 general causes. Mechanical failures, especially those related to faulty brakes and bad tires, account for a significant number of fatal accidents. Environmental conditions such as blind corners, narrow streets, heavy fog, intermittent rain or snow resulting in slippery roads also contribute to the accident statistics. But without doubt, the most frequently reported factors in car accidents are errors of human judgment, all the way from such follies as speed and drunken driving to such momentary lapses as failure to signal a turn or change from one lane to another. The man behind the wheel is often his own worst enemy.
2. In the years following World War II, the rate of population growth in the U.S. soared to an average level of 3.5 births per woman. By the 1970s, however, the birth rate was slowing down. In December 1972, the Census Bureau reported that it had dropped to about 2 births per woman, or what is called zero population growth. Even so, because there were many more women of childbearing age in the 1970s than there were in the 1950s, the Census Bureau estimated that by the end of the 20th century, America's population would reach 250 million. Unit 15, Part 1. Entrepreneurs.
Have you ever heard of these companies? Apple Computer, Atari, and the Federal Express Corporation? Maybe you have heard of them, but do you know anything about the men who started them? Well, Steve Jobs was a 21-year-old college dropout when he and a friend started Apple Computer in 1977. Today he is a very rich man, worth more than $150 million. Nolan Bushnell, the man who started Atari, became rich and famous in 1972 when he invented Pong, the first video game. At that time, he was 20 years old. In 1976, he sold Atari for $28 million. The third company, Federal Express, delivers packages anywhere in the United States in 24 hours or less. Its president is Frederick Smith. He is 41 years old. This young company is worth more than $600 million. What do Steve Jobs, Nolan Bushnell, and Frederick Smith have in common? Well, to begin with, they are all relatively young. Second, they are all rich. And most important, each of them became rich by doing something that no other person had done before. In other words, the Apple was the first home computer, Pong was the first video game, Federal Express was the first overnight delivery service. Steve Jobs, Nolan Bushnell, and Frederick Smith became rich and famous because each of them started a new industry. In English, we call people like them entrepreneurs. So, the definition of an entrepreneur is a person who organizes and manages a new business. Most of today's successful entrepreneurs, like the 3 I've already mentioned, are young. Some of them come from rich families, but others are poor. Some have a lot of education, but some, like Steve Jobs, never finished college. As you can see, entrepreneurs can come from many different backgrounds. However, all entrepreneurs have one important characteristic in common. They are not afraid to take risks. We could say that they are all gamblers. American history is full of famous entrepreneurs. Let's meet some of the early ones. Francis Cabot Lowell, for example, created the first modern textile factory in the United States in 1813. Textile means cloth. Lowell got the money for his factory, $400,000, from his family and friends. He also invented a machine for making cloth. He became rich by selling cloth and copies of his machine. 4 years later, Lowell's business was making $34,000 a year. In those days, that was a lot of money. Another early entrepreneur was George Westinghouse. His career began in 1869 when he invented an air brake for stopping trains safely. Then, in 1886, he started the famous Westinghouse Electric Company. By 1900, this company was worth more than $120 million, and it had more than 50,000 employees. Have you ever heard of this company? It produces refrigerators, stoves, and many other electrical items. You have probably never heard of Edwin Land. But in 1937, he started the Polaroid Corporation in order to make lenses for eyeglasses. Then, in 1948, he invented the Instamatic camera. That was the beginning of a whole new industry. It made Edwin Land a very rich man. Today, whenever we use an Instamatic camera, we think of the name Polaroid. Now let's return to our discussion of today's entrepreneurs. Nowadays, new industries are usually what we call high-tech, you know, computers, electronics, things like that. High-tech industries require creative thinking. That's why today's entrepreneurs often build their businesses near universities. For example, there are many high-tech industries in Boston, near Harvard, MIT, and other respected universities. In California, many high-tech industries are found in an area near San Francisco called Silicon Valley. These industries benefit from being close to Stanford, UC Berkeley, and other universities in the area. In conclusion, all of you probably know someone who started his or her own business. In the United States, we call this person an entrepreneur. We admire and respect this type of person. In fact, entrepreneurs like Steve Jobs have become a new kind of American cultural hero, like basketball players or movie stars. If you ask a child what he wants to be when he grows up, don't be surprised if he answers, an entrepreneur.
Part 2. Changes in the American family. The traditional American family used to have a working father, a housewife mother, and two or three children. But in the last 20 or 25 years, this picture has changed. Now we have many different kinds of families and living situations besides this traditional one. For example, there are many single mothers and single fathers who are raising children by themselves. There are married couples who decide that they don't want any children. Sometimes adult children who have been living alone for a long time come back and live with their parents again. You can also find groups of older people sharing a house in order to save money. And there are many other examples of new types of families in this country. Why has the traditional family changed so much? Well, the reasons are both social and economic. First, as you know, the divorce rate is high in our culture. As a result, we have many single-parent families. Second, there is unemployment among young adults. If they cannot find a job, many times they return home and live with their parents again. But of course, the most important reason for the changes in the American family is that most American women now work outside the home. In fact, 54.5% of all American women are now working or looking for work. This means that more than half of all American homes do not have a full-time homemaker anymore. With so many women working, our society has some difficult new problems. For example, who will take care of children and old people? Who will do the housework? Who will do volunteer work? Some people might say that these are women's problems, so women should be the ones to solve them. But more and more, people understand that everybody in our society is responsible for trying to find answers to these problems. In fact, many companies are trying to help modern working parents, both the mother and the father, by creating flexible new policies. Here are a few examples.
One example is that many companies now allow a woman to leave her job temporarily in order to have a baby. This is called maternity leave. The woman may receive part of her salary while she is not working, and of course, her job will be waiting for her when she is ready to return to work. Second, you know, that big companies like IBM or Mitsubishi often transfer their employees to other cities, right? If a company transfers the husband, for example, this might create a problem for the wife, because now she has to find a new job, too. Well, now there are some companies that will help the husband or wife, or a transferred worker, to find a new job. Another new policy is that many companies now have something called flex time. Flex time means that instead of working from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., as most people do in this country, a worker can work from, say, 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., or from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., etc. As you can imagine, flex time is very useful for people with children. Many of the big companies in this country now have it. Fourth, some companies allow their employees to work at home instead of coming into the office every day. Working at home is easy for people in professions like computer programming and telephone sales. Fifth, a few large companies now have daycare centers for the children of their employees. I've given you five examples of new company policies that are supposed to make life a little easier for working mothers and fathers. Let me repeat them for you briefly. Maternity leave, helping the wife or husband of a transferred worker to find a new job in another city, flex time, allowing employees to work at home, and daycare centers. However, it's important for you to understand that there are only a few large companies that can afford to help their employees with these kinds of programs. For most people, trying to work and take care of a family is still very, very difficult.
1. What is the traditional American family like?
2. Which of the following is the most important reason for the changes in the American family?
3. What percentage of American women are working outside the home or looking for work?
4. How does a company help a transferred employee?
5. Which of the following statements is true about the policies mentioned in the passage?
Part 3. The Baby Boomer Generation.
Between the end of World War II and the middle of the 1960s, the United States experienced a huge increase in its birth rate. In other words, more babies were born during those 20 years than during any time before or since then. We have a funny name for this increase in the birth rate. We call it the baby boom, and any person born during those years is called a baby boomer. Right now, the oldest members of this generation are in their 40s. This fact is very important because traditionally, the age group with the most money has consisted of people between the ages of 35 and 44. Well, the baby boomers are getting older, and every day more and more of them are entering this 35 to 44 age group. All this means that the baby boomers are not only the largest age group in the U.S., but they are also the richest. Because of their numbers and their wealth, the baby boomers have tremendous economic power in this country. Although they have a lot of money, the baby boomers do not handle their money in the same way as their parents did. There are three reasons for this. First, you need to remember that the baby boom started after the Second World War, during times of inflation. The result of this is that baby boomers usually spend their money instead of saving it like their parents did. Baby boomers are also big users of credit, unlike their parents. Second, the baby boomers never experienced the economic difficulties of the 1930s. They grew up in comfort, even luxury. Finally, baby boomers generally have more leisure time than their parents did. The tastes and preferences of the baby boom generation are also very, very different from those of their parents. And this fact, of course, has influenced American business and industry in many important ways. Let's look at a few examples. What do you think is the biggest expense for people between the ages of 35 and 44? That's right, housing. People in this age group have to borrow a lot of money to pay for houses or condominiums, and they also spend a lot of money on furniture and appliances. So, as more and more baby boomers have entered the 35 to 44 age group, it has been very profitable for banks, furniture manufacturers, interior decorators, and all other businesses connected to housing and home maintenance. People in this age group are also very interested in cars, especially foreign ones. They want cars that are economical, but at the same time, they don't mind spending money for extras like air conditioning, sunroofs, and stereos. The baby boomers are also the largest market for campers and vans, what we call recreational vehicles. The car industry has made a lot of money thanks to the baby boom generation. Now, because the baby boomers are getting older, you can see all around you industries that didn't exist 15 years ago. I'm talking about things like diet centers, tanning salons, and health spas. These businesses are popular because the baby boomers are terribly concerned with staying attractive and healthy as they move into middle age. So these people spend huge amounts of money on physical fitness and beauty. Finally, as the baby boomers grow older, many companies are creating new products designed specifically for middle-aged consumers. For example, several years ago, Levi Strauss started making jeans especially designed for men in their 30s and 40s. Another example, Mattel, which is famous for making toys for kids, now makes electronic toys for adults. A very obvious example of a new product is light beer, which was invented only because baby boomers were afraid of getting fat from drinking regular beer. Even McDonald's is trying to appeal to people in their 30s and 40s by selling salads in addition to hamburgers and french fries. In conclusion, we've seen that the baby boomers, especially those between the ages of 35 and 44, are the largest and richest generation that this country has ever seen. Of course, as this generation grows older, its power and influence will remain. Therefore, we can expect that the economy will continue to change, and business and industry will continue to respond to the special tastes and preferences of this group.
Part 4. Advertising and the Media. Let us suppose that a car company, like General Motors, has just come out with a new car. Naturally, GM is eager to sell its new car to the public. But before GM can persuade anybody to buy its new car, it must inform the public about the new product. The best way to do this, of course, is through advertising. No company can hope to make a profit on any product unless it advertises it first. The most important decision that a company has to make regarding advertising is where to advertise. On TV? In magazines? On the radio? In newspapers? We refer to these means of communication as the media. There are three categories of media: print, broadcast, and direct. Today, we are going to describe each of these categories and discuss their importance and usefulness in advertising. The first category, the print media, consists of printed information sources. In other words, newspapers and magazines. For the advertisers, each of these has certain advantages and disadvantages. Let's talk first about newspapers, which receive more money from advertisements each year than any other medium. This is because newspaper advertising has several outstanding advantages. First of all, nearly everybody reads newspapers. Therefore, newspaper ads reach huge numbers of people. Moreover, newspapers are generally local. This allows small, local businesses to advertise directly to their potential customers. Third, newspaper advertising is relatively cheap, so the ad can be as long as the advertiser wants, and it can also be repeated. These are the advantages of advertising in a newspaper. On the other hand, newspaper ads have no color, and they are not very exciting or glamorous. For that reason, you don't find ads, say, for expensive cars like Porsches in newspapers. Instead, you find these ads in the second type of print medium, magazines. For the advertiser, the greatest advantage of magazines is that they have specialized groups of readers. In other words, the people who read Car and Driver are probably not the same people who read Glamour, which is a woman's magazine, or The New Republic, a political magazine. Obviously, an advertiser will place his ad in the magazine where it will probably be seen by people who are interested in his product. For example, General Motors will advertise its car in Car and Driver, but not in Glamour or The New Republic. So the advantage of advertising in a magazine is that it allows a business to direct its ads to the people who are most interested in the product. The big disadvantage of magazine advertisement is that it can be very expensive, especially in magazines like Playboy or National Geographic. Let's move along now and talk about the broadcast media, by which we mean radio and television. These also have both advantages and disadvantages. First, radio. Radio has two of the same advantages as newspapers. Almost everybody listens to it, and it's usually local. The disadvantages of radio ads are that they must be short and that they are not permanent in the way printed ads are. Millions of dollars are spent each year on radio ads, but millions more are spent on television advertising. You can easily understand why. Of all the media, TV, with sound, movement, and color, is the most dramatic, so the ads are easy to remember. How many of you, for example, can sing the slogan for Coca-Cola? It's the real thing. Television ads are viewed by millions of people all over the country because, first of all, almost everybody watches TV. And second, because most TV programs are broadcast nationally. These are the great advantages of TV advertising. On the other hand, ads on TV are enormously expensive. For example, a 30-second commercial during the evening can cost $150,000. Obviously, only large companies can afford to advertise on television.